The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Michael White. At the last day of the Conservative Party conference in Manchester, and therefore the last day of the conference season, brackets, thank goodness for that, close brackets, David Cameron here has put a brave face on the circling gloom all over the country and the wider Western world. He's told us all things will get better.
If we put in the effort, if we correct those mistakes, if we confront those vested interests and take on the failed ideas of the past, then I know we can turn this ship around.
It's been a fairly peaceful week for the party, but they did have a bumpy overnight glitch in the PR department when Cameron was forced to rewrite, clarify a part of the speech after a briefing they had one or two of the morning papers to splash on the line that he seemed to be instructing families to pay off their credit cards. What he ended up saying was this.
When you're in a debt crisis, some of the normal things that governments can do to deal with a normal recession, like borrowing to cut taxes or increasing spending, these things won't work because they lead to more debt, which would make the crisis worse. Why? Because it takes risks of higher interest rates, less confidence, and the threat of even higher taxes in future. The only way out of a debt crisis is to deal with your debts. That's why households are paying down the credit card and the store card bills. It means banks getting their books in order. And it means governments all over the world, cutting spending and living within their means.
Of course, if everybody pays off their debts all in a hurry, it comes up against what the great economist John Maynard Keynes called the paradox of thrift. Everybody pays things off. As individuals, they may be doing right, but collectively, we'd be cutting our collective throats because nobody'd be buying anything. Let that pass. Cameron was on firmer territory when he laid into the Labour Party, but without mentioning Ed Miliband at all by name.
Now, of course, our whole deficit reduction programme is really just one big bailout of the last Labour government. We've been subjected to a sort of national apology tour by Labour these last few months. Sorry for sucking up to Gaddafi, for not regulating the banks properly, for crushing civil liberties, for failing to go green, for not building enough houses. Sorry for the infighting that made it the most dysfunctional government in the history of our country. But you know what? Nothing. Not a peep on the thing they really need to say sorry for. Wasting billions and billions of your money. No apology for that at all.
I think what he was trying to do was to say, yes, we've got real problems, but we've got a balance them with optimism and the belief we can be masters of our own fate. Optimism, a sense of the future, belief that it's not all over for Britain, the best is yet to come.
So let's see an optimistic future. Let us show the world some fight. Let us pull together, let us work together, and let us together lead Britain to better days ahead.
What did you think of the speech? You're looking cheerful.
I thought it was particularly positive, considering it's a long time before the next general election.
Yep.
And so there's not that frisson there was 2 years ago when we were here last. Mm. We were on the precipice of what we thought was going to be a romping home win. I was expecting it almost to be quite flat today, but it wasn't, because there was that feeling of hope.
OK, your companion here, sir, what did you think of that?
Well, I mean, it covered a whole array of topics. I mean, the topic that I was very interested in was the housing crisis that we're effectively in, and that David Cameron and Grant Shapps have really got their heads round the fact.
This brownfield sites build 100,000 houses and on public land and pay for them later, sort of thing. Is that what you meant?
Pretty much so, but it's actually £200,000 in total, I think. That's what they're looking at.
Did that do it for you?
Fantastic.
What did you like about it?
There was the optimism, there was the, not the, oh, well, everything's going wrong in the economy in the past. There's something actually showing you for the future what we're actually going to aim for in government and how things are going to be better in 4 or 5 years' time than they are now.
It's pretty tough times at the moment for everybody out there, isn't it?
Of course it is.
Not just Britain, but pretty tough.
Of course it is. Well, that's what a Conservative government's there for. We always come in, clear up the Labour's mess, and what we're going to show and what David's shown today is how having a Conservative government isn't just to clear up the mess, but how it's going to be better in the future.
Oh, John Arabia Mary, High Commissioner for Uganda.
Yes.
I've attended the conference since Sunday.
Yes.
And in my view, it's been a huge success.
Now, here's an interesting thing. Since it's you we're talking to, before the Prime Minister's speech, they had a big video appeal for the East African famine. Now, that surprised me. Were you surprised?
I wasn't, because I've been following the efforts that Great Britain is taking to assist the people of Somalia, the people of Ethiopia. So I wasn't surprised at all. Very, very impressed.
Good, good. Thank you. Well, we're looking for MPs now, and frankly, they all seem to have scarpered for the train. Heaven forbid the thought that they went home and watched it on the telly. How disloyal can you get? But no. Just coming through. There's Ken Clark. Let's see if we can head him off. He's giving a television interview. Sky is heading towards him. So are we. We've landed him just at the same time.
I thought the speech was extremely good. It's a difficult tone to get right, because this is a difficult time for the country. We face a lot of problems, and he spelt out very clearly, you know, how tough the job is that we've got. At the same time, he did it optimistically and confidently, getting that balance right. I think he did it very well. I think a rather insecure population wants to see a leader who has some self-confidence, knows what he believes has got to be done, and was demonstrating to the party what he was going to lead them into doing. So I've heard a fair few of these, but that was a pretty good one.
Old lags, you and me, who does he remind you of as a leader of the party? He seems to hark back to an earlier age in a way. I hesitate to say the age of the Etonians, but there's a certain style about him which has got... He carries his confidence easily, doesn't he?
He carries his confidence very easily, and yet nobody I've heard is quite such a young, confident sort of character. And we haven't had that many confident leaders. I think he's in the Clinton-Blair style mold, which is very modern. He reminds me of those, and as they're two of the best campaigners I know ever seen, that's fine. Obviously, the politics are different, although not as dramatically different as any of the three might argue. A Conservative leader before that, he's certainly not Harold Mack, and he's certainly not Margaret Thatcher, really. Her style was very different, nor John Major. So, you'd have to go back to, I don't know, Balfour? No, certainly not.
Baldwin, it's a safety-first conference, this, isn't it? As steady as we go, we're in trouble.
He wasn't like he was very assertive, very confident, the delivery, but the fact he wasn't shouting, Stanley Baldwin would do that, but Stanley Baldwin was folksy. He'd have been telling them about the rolling hills of Worcestershire before he finished. That's not David Cameron's style. If he saw the rolling hills of Worcestershire, he'd be striding over them rather briskly.
He loved them. He did when he took on the planning lobby.
We had a few rural references, but on the whole, I think David is more a man striding along highways, really. But he is a very 21st century leader. I think the styles have changed. It's presentational. Although, I say, this was not dramatic presentational.
Conversational kind of rhetoric.
Oh,
too.
That's certainly true. Yeah. Even a few of the older members of Parliament used to use those Edwardian rolling phrases, which nowadays get laughed at. Yeah. The great orators of before the First World War would be, you have people hugging their sides if they spoke now. That's the modern conversational style, but it's very carefully put together, getting the tone and the pace and the delivery right. He's good at that. He does it naturally.
It worked in the hall here, but will it work... Constituents of yours who, as he said, anxious about their jobs, anxious about falling wages, rising prices, watching that on the box on the telly which it's made for, will they shake their heads and say, you know, what planet's he on, Ken, when they see you at the weekend?
No, I think they'll find that reassuring. I think they'll find it reassuring and clear. I mean, the second conference of a parliament is always, and it's not a creature one, and there's no background of crisis here. That's why I had all these idiot exchanges about a cat, because there wasn't actually anything to sort of go on about. And because at the heart of it is a serious problem of government. And that's all this had to catch, really. But I think he caught it confidently and well. And he has all his community themes, people here to go out and lead in their communities, all that sort of thing. No, it's a very 21st century delivery, I think. I can't think of a historic analogy. But it was a difficult balance to get right. This is an impossible hall. It's a hopeless hall. You're addressing the party in a railway station.
Railway station.
Well, it has been very well converted. I'm very fond of the GMEX, but it's difficult for the Conservative Party conference. I got my standing ovation, but it was a quiet standing ovation. I wasn't bothered because I followed Boris, and even he got a quiet standing ovation.
You've had a few.
He actually, was able to hold the audience when, I'm afraid, it's a lovely place, the GMEX. I like it. But for a Conservative Party conference, it's too wide. And if you're up there and you're an old hand trying to play an audience, you know, a bit music hall like, this is a very, very difficult gig.
Of course, events at modern party conferences are now pretty effectively stage managed by press office and spin doctors. In my youth, they used to be wild events party conferences, especially Labour, of course. The Tories always fighting over the Empire or Europe. Brilliant theatrical stuff for journalists, but of course voters watching on the black and white TVs thought, not going to vote for that bunch of hooligans, so they've controlled it all much better. There's still plenty, of course, for sketch writers like our own Simon Hoggart to get their teeth into. Let's see what Simon has made of it.
We're in a bubble. We're always in a bubble of a conference. The thing is that people come here not to discuss the fate of the world, but to have a holiday, really. If you're a Tory, you're absolutely fascinated. They go to attend the plenary debates, if you can call them that, and then they go to endless fringe meetings. You hear them twittering away in the hall, wondering what they're going to see lunchtime, what they're going to see in the early evening, mid-evening, late evening, and so on. So, in fact, you know, it's like the mask of the Red Death in Poe's famous story. They're going to carry on, even if we discovered that the British economy had completely disappeared.
In fairness to the Tories, indeed all the other conferences, they managed to have a good time as well. The bars are crowded, they're all over pricing, scalping the customers. Some of the restaurants are pretty full. They have a good time too.
What's been interesting has been how boring it is, really. The speeches are now... Well, there's no question of a debate anymore. No, not even a pretense. No, there used to be at least a pretense, which people came up and praised the front bench of the Conservative Party for the wonderful things they were doing. Very, very rarely someone would slip through and have a contrary opinion, but it was pretty rare. Now what they tend to have is the Secretary of State, for whatever it is, and a panel of people, often ordinary members of the public, who just happen to agree with everything that the Conservative Party stands for, who go to the platform and give witness, testimony, to the sheer wonderfulness of what the Conservatives are doing. And everybody sits there placidly taking it in. The notion that anyone might turn up on the platform and say, look, we're getting it wrong, we must start doing it a different way, is absurd.
Your description there, in a way, makes me think that they've turned the conference itself into a fringe debate, where they have a chairman and three or four speakers who discuss things in front of a polite audience. Never mind, we are selling the conference short, because midweek, early one morning, we had Boris.
Boris has lifted this spirit of sheer, well, I call it ansurak, which is charisma spelt backwards, this sort of sense that nothing much was going on and there was nobody very interesting to watch. Boris, of course, is interesting. He's very funny. What he takes is an ordinary political speech. If you read the text of what he was supposed to say, it's very, very dull, very straightforward. You know, we do a better job than Labour, vote for us. But what he adds is little curlicues, little jokes. It's as if we're paddling in Boris's stream of consciousness.
If you crack down on the small stuff, the big stuff starts to take care of itself. And let me tell you that in Merseyside, he used automatic number plate recognition to round up every car he could find that was either untaxed or uninsured. And he put them all, thousands of vehicles, on a central reservation of some big road leading into Liverpool, I'm not entirely sure which. And the drivers of those cars had two choices. They could either come and claim their vehicle, in which case they would be arrested, or else they could leave it, and Mr. Hogan Howe would have it crushed. And crime fell in Liverpool over 4 years by 40%. And so my message to London, we're going to do the same in London, my message to London's criminal fraternity is tax and insure your car, or you'll get it back for Christmas. As a small cube from the crusher with love.
People love that, actually, and they'll forgive Boris almost anything. Well, this lot will anyway. But then, on Tuesday night, he cut loose. Having been very much on message in his speech in the morning, he announced that there should be a referendum on Europe, and he also let it be known, what we always knew anyway, that he would quite happily become Prime Minister, which of course is a direct threat, or challenge, not necessarily a threat, to David Cameron.
Should say in fairness that I'm told that Boris rang around afterwards and said to political editors and others, I didn't actually mean what I'm quoted as saying. So that adds to the mystery and the drama. Now, two substantial speeches, I thought. One was by George Osborne, saying he's not going to do too much to boost the economy because we'll all end up having to pay for it anyway. Controversial assertion, but I thought a well put and well taken by the audience. And the other was William Hague hosing down the faithful on Europe. Did you catch that one? He says no. He shakes his head. Anyway, he's the Foreign Secretary, Simon.
I have a life.
Simon has a life. Hague said, in effect, well, we want to pick an awful lot of fights with Europe. They are, and we thought the euro was a very bad idea from day one, but this is not the time to pick a fight. Is Hague a good speaker in your book?
I think he was better at the age of 16, of course, when he sat the conference absolutely
alike. We saw him then, didn't we?
I'm afraid we're both very, very old. The trouble is, he came on the same day as Michael Heseltine made his first real rabble-rousing speech to the Tories, the one where he appeared to go completely mad at the very thought of socialism. It was an act he did brilliantly year after year until they stopped cheering it after he became the man who defenestrated Margaret Thatcher. The speaker who lost out in the end, of course, was the Home Secretary, Theresa May. Her speech was completely drowned by the controversy over the business of the cat and the illegal immigrant. She claimed that an illegal immigrant had been allowed to stay by a tribunal because he had bought a pet cat. It turned out to be much more complicated than that. And the row, however, absolutely obliterated what she was trying to say in her speech.
The incorrigible Simon Hoggart there. The Guardian's been well represented here this week, and another of my colleague, 24/7 blogger Andrew Sparrow, has been following the events here in the most minute detail for our rolling political blog. I asked Andy to give us the four main points he'll be taking away.
One, the economy. The economy is overwhelming everything in government thinking. During the summer, at the time of the riots, there was a lot of speculation that social issues and social breakdown was going to be the great theme of the party conference season. But it's kind of barely registered, really. And the reason for that is not because the riots weren't important. It's just you sense the only thing that really matters here is the economy and growth. Everything else is peripheral to that. Two, Europe. There are a lot of Eurosceptic right-wingers who are really serious about wanting to renegotiate Britain's relationship with Europe. They've been publishing books and pamphlets on this. They've formed a group in Parliament. And there was a lot of speculation that we were going to see a really big row at the party conference, and it just hasn't happened at all. I think there are a couple of reasons for that. Partly because the economy is overwhelmingly the story of the conference, that the Eurosceptics have felt now's not the time to push on that. But more importantly, I think David Cameron has been sending a lot of messages out to them that this is going to be an election issue. Then there's a limit to what they can do now because they're in coalition with the Lib Dems, but come the election, they're going to go to the country with a platform for a kind of serious renegotiation, and they think that'll win them seats. Three, Ed Miliband. The Conservatives aren't afraid of Ed Miliband. They've noticed what he said about something for nothing culture, but they've appropriated that. They've grabbed it for themselves, and they think it's their theme. They're not going around saying that the next election is in the bag, but you sense quite clearly that's what they think. I have yet to come across anyone who seems genuinely afraid of a Labour Party led by Ed Miliband. They don't think he's an election winner. Whether they're right or wrong or not is a different matter. And fourthly, the Lib Dems. That's been interesting, because at the Lib Dem conference we had a whole string of Lib Dem cabinet ministers sort of come out and say how different they were from the Conservatives, how they were the restraining, civilising, liberal influence from these kind of nasty, rabid Thatcherite right-wingers. And there are a lot of Conservative MPs who would love to see David Cameron hit back, but they hadn't done that at all. Instead, we've had minister after minister coming to the platform and praising Nick Clegg and other of their Lib Dem colleagues by name. They don't want to be forced into a trap by the Lib Dems where they become perceived as the nasty element of the coalition. They're doing their best to avoid that.
Andy Sparrow there. So that's it from me this year on the conference circuit. What have I thought? Lib Dems, insanely cheerful considering the difficult position they're in, and not to mention 8 or 9% in the polls. Labour, not cutting each other's throats, but not really out of the hole and the legacy of government, which they still haven't explained away and eased in the public mind. They won't find it easy to get a hearing yet. They're working on it. Could be a lot worse, you could say. Tories, subdued. Somebody said to me, it's a sort of cheerful front, but there's a lot of anxiety beneath the surface. Well, you can say that again, but that goes for the wider country. Hey, what am I saying? Politicians in touch with the national mood? You decide. The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Michael White. On the next train back to London. Thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.